Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Monday, April 14th. Welcome
to
the show. Hi.
Happy Passover.
Yeah, thank you.
The first day, I guess, right?
I almost forgot again. Passover starts tonight.
Yeah.
Usually, yeah, Jewish holidays start like in the evening and they go for 24 hours till the next evening. So, you know, as opposed to, I guess, Christian holidays, we start in the morning and it ends the following morning or something. You know? So it's different that way. So it hasn't officially started yet.
Yes, not till tonight.
But you would have thought it did when you go to the New Ralph's down the street. Did you get a chance to go?
No, I haven't been yet.
They've got like a huge kosher department. Like you wouldn't believe it's almost half the store.
I'm so excited to go. In fact, I'm actually going to go right after we get off air. Yeah. I've been out of town all weekend, so I haven't been able to go.
That's true.
And when I got back last night, I was like, oh, I'm too tired to go.
I know. But there's just so many Jews around here that they figured, you know, it's worth it to do that.
Yeah. I'm going to my first Passover dinner tonight. I'm
excited. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, how cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited. In Encino, of course, in the valley.
Yeah.
Where all the Jewish people live.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll feel right at home there.
Yeah, I'm excited. That's I heard cool. The food's really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's different kind of food because you'll see in the beginning, there's the whole ritual of reading the book and everything, you know. So I don't know. You're probably going to feel left out or something,
yeah.
You know.
I think I'm the only non-Jewish person that's going to
do
that.
Yeah, probably. Not that the Jewish person, people are any more interested in reading this thing because, you know, at least in my family, it's like we go through it really quick so we can get to the food, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, so during this ritual, you get to eat a couple of like little pieces of matzah and some bitter herb and lettuce and stuff and
cool.
And egg and you wash your hands while, you know, like someone brings like a bowl and you kind of wash your hands and stuff. So
I think I'm gonna feel way out of my comfort zone.
You will Maybe do up some reading on this. So
maybe, yeah, I think I should.
It's going to be a culture shock for you, I'm telling
you.
But then again, you know, it's like I got to tell you, most people here in L.A. are Reform Jews. So they don't get as detailed as Orthodox Jews or the ones that are in Israel, because there it's like more traditional or something, so they're really more serious about it. But so you don't have to worry about it. I mean, most people really go through it quickly, although some Reformed people I've met are actually more into the religion than people from Israel.
Wow.
You know, yeah. So it's
this could be interesting.
It'll be very interesting. I don't know what kind of crowd you'll be with, but we'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll tell you guys all about it tomorrow.
Yeah, you're going to hear songs in Hebrew you can't relate to.
I remember I went to a Persian event. And everyone was, I don't even know what this song was. Everyone was singing it. I was the only person in the whole place. And there was probably 300 people.
Wow.
And that's the most uncomfortable I've ever felt in Los Angeles.
Really?
I felt very out of place. It's like, how did I end up here? I don't really know what I'm doing.
I know.
And it was obvious. I also stood out because
you're
I'm
blonde and
yeah,
fair skin and everything. Yeah, they're all dark.
Yeah. So.
I know. I've heard of that before.
Yeah, so I stood out then.
Yeah, I'm sure. But in a good way, I'm sure, you know.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully I didn't stand out in a bad way. But
yeah.
Tonight,
no,
everyone,
Middle Eastern men like blondes.
I know everybody. Well, most people that will be there tonight, so
yeah.
I'm invited into the home, so
good,
that's a good thing.
Good, yeah, just be there with an open mind
and
understand it's a different culture and everything.
Yeah.
And see, you might actually like it. You know?
I might. I love the Jewish communities. I think everyone seems really tight, and everyone comes together really well, and I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the general consensus, but not obviously everybody's like that.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, at least family is pretty important. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, talking about that, I don't know if you heard, because I know you're out of this planet for over the weekend. But
it was hard not having cell phone reception. Really? It killed me. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
But well, they had a shooting in Kansas of a Jewish center, and they killed three people. But the irony of this is two of the people were Christian Methodists and not even Jewish.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah. So that was like sort of like crazy. But this reminds me, there was a shooting, such a shooting over at the JCC, which is a Jewish center, cultural center in over here in the valley. And that was some time ago. But I remember my kids were going to that place.
Oh, and, wow, that's scary.
Yeah. But the amazing thing, how we found out about this, is we actually took the day off and we drove to Big Bear. And so the kids weren't there that day.
Wow.
I mean, imagine, you know, how lucky you are.
So lucky. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You know, and actually a couple of their friends got injured and stuff, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
From this shooter. So, you know, you've got...
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's
so
really crazy.
So there's anti-Semites all over, and they said he was a former Ku Klux Klan, so it's no wonder. But, yeah. But it's like it's always... I don't know. It's always been like that. You know,
yeah.
Let's pick on the Jews. You know, they're like mm-hmm. less than us, type of a thing. But I don't want to get into that because that brings me down.
Yeah. So. Did you hear about the lady who killed, the police found six or seven dead babies in her home in Utah?
Seven, right? Seven babies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And her bail has been set at $6 million.
Wow. So, I mean, how did this killing go? I mean,
accused of killing six babies that she gave birth to over 10 years ago.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I don't really understand this story. It's very strange because she has three children that lived in the house with her.
Right.
But these babies were killed and kept in the garage.
Right, in bags and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you wonder how it didn't smell or everything. But,
yeah.
But you know, it's like these things have happened many times before.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't even, you know.
No.
They're not
but had she
it.
Carried? I guess they're doing DNA results to see DNA tests to see if they these babies were conceived by her and her husband who just got out of jail. But where did I? To some extent, I don't think they were her babies because if she carried six kids for 9 months,
right?
Where did everyone else think these babies went?
Right.
It's confusing.
Yeah. But
that,
maybe nobody
that
knew
a lot
she
of
was
questions.
Pregnant. Yeah. Because some women are able to hide their pregnancy.
That's
I don't
true.
Know how that
That's
happens, but they say it happens.
Like that show, you know? I didn't know I was pregnant.
Oh, okay.
And people are having babies like all over the place.
Yeah. Is that you would know that reality show, right?
I know, right?
You know all the reality shows.
But that is a TV show.
Wow.
I didn't know I was pregnant.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What will they think of next? I don't get it,
you know, right?
Yeah. Wow.
There's like 16 and pregnant and then the celebrity rehab and couples therapy.
Right.
There's the sex rehab one.
Yeah.
They're like the more therapy-based, like,
yeah.
reality.
But
then you just
like,
have the housewives and total divas
right.
and all those.
Do they still have the hoarders, you know, the ones that hoard
yeah,
all the
yeah.
stuff?
Yeah, I like that one. And I also, I like the American Pickers. They're good yeah. ones. They're on, are they on History Channel? They're
I
on
don't
a
know.
Channel like that. They're good reality shows.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What's American?
American Pickers is when they go around, these two guys go on a van around the country and go to places like farms or places that people have a lot of junk and
right.
search through everything and find pieces that are worth money and that they can sell and then offer the
yeah.
owner money for it.
Wow.
And then you see it being sold and it's cool.
Yeah.
And they find some crazy things.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really crazy things.
Yeah.
It's
well,
cool.
Yeah, they all sound the same, all these shows. You know, I mean, you have like Pawn Stars and you have Storage Wars and
yeah.
it's all about finding things that are valuable.
Completely.
Wow.
<Yeah. laughs> It's just how you can make a the same kind of concept, different.
Yeah.
That's now what people are trying to do.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
Make it just a little bit different so the network likes it enough to pick it up.
Right. They're running out of ideas, I think. How many more things can you do, you know? Yeah. So you were out of town this weekend.
I was. I went up to Big Sur camping.
So you got there in one piece.
Yeah. It was a long drive up.
Right. Did you enjoy the drive?
It was beautiful, but by the time we were driving, I was so tired already because I'd woken up early.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a meeting and just different things that I was already exhausted. So we got up there late, very cold.
Really?
I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I'm definitely not a camper.
Really, huh?
Definitely.
So
not
you
a
decided
camper.
You're not. You suspected you weren't.
Yes, I now know I'm not a camper. It was just so cold, and I didn't bring the right clothes, I didn't bring any boots. Which was so stupid. I had sneakers on and then I wore leggings.
Uh-huh.
So I had like my ankles showing. And so then I put these big socks. I just looked stupid. And it was just... And I was so dirty. And then coming back last night, everything smells of smoke.
Really?
Everything.
What, from the fire?
Even things I didn't really wear.
What?
But I had a lot of fun. I did have a lot of fun. It was a good group.
Yeah.
And like cooking s'mores around the fire, telling ghost stories, telling all kinds of stories.
Nice.
And then we went to the beach and saw all these beautiful views. We went climbing on rocks and cool stuff. But just not
but not overnight for you, right?
No.
Just go for the
There was so many beautiful cabins. Yeah. I literally wanted to be like, we should go stay there. We should go like get one of those.
Yeah.
You
stayed in tents, right?
Yeah, we
So were you
tents.
Freezing the whole
so
time?
So cold.
Really?
So cold.
It's hard to sleep when it's very cold, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was. I slept. I had like 3 pairs of pants on, 4 pairs of socks, and 3 sweaters.
Wow.
And I wore a beanie.
And this is California.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you went to Alaska.
I know, and that's what I slept in.
Whoa.
It was insane. It was crazy. But it was fun.
Yeah, I guess. You know, you make the best of it. And
yeah,
stuff, you
for
know.
Sure. But
it's good adventures, you know.
It was a very good experience. But it's kind of one of those things that I'd never camped before. And I'm okay with not camping for a good, like, 5 years.
Yeah. good for now.
Yeah, I've got my camping fix. I have so many friends that love to camp. They camp everywhere. For their vacation, they'll drive around for like 2 weeks and camp in different spots. And that's just not me.
I know. They're like the total extreme, you know? Wow.
That's not for me.
Yeah. Well, that's understandable. You know, I mean, look, the idea of camping interests me and appeals to me, but I haven't camped since I was a kid.
Right.
You know, I mean, so I can't say that I've done it, but I definitely prefer 5-star hotels, you know, if you ask me.
A nice comfy bed
with
sheets
know.
And a soft pillow and a nice warm shower and your own bathroom.
There you go. Now that sounds appealing.
Yeah, it really does.
You're funny, man. This is funny. So even the drive, what about the drive back where you... did you just take the freeway coming back?
No, we still went the windy way.
Right.
And I mean, it's stunning. It's such a beautiful drive.
Right.
The way back, I think we drove the whole way the really pretty way. On the way there, we didn't. It wasn't until the last part that we went right by the water.
Oh, I see.
Till the scenic view. But on the way back, we went the whole way, and it took a while, but it was just stunning.
Yeah.
The views are just impeccable, and it reminded me of Scotland.
Oh, really?
And on the way up, we stopped at this kind of cove thing, and there was millions of elephant seals.
Yeah,
millions.
I remember that place.
And there was like a viewing point, but like a mile down the road further, there was another viewing point, but you could actually go down to the seals, but no one really knew it was there. So everyone was stood at the fence part where you can just look down.
Right.
I was literally probably 2 feet away from these seals, and they were just staring. They just like sat up and stared with their huge eyes. It was very cool.
Wow.
Kind of scared me because then he like got really angry and I screamed and ran away. I was like, let's go. He's mad at me. I'm invading their territory.
Yeah.
But I just love nature and wildlife. I really do.
Yeah.
As much as I don't like camping, I love being out there, but just not in the camping scenario. But
yeah.
But the drive was stunning.
Yeah.
So pretty.
Well, cool. Cool. Yeah. Well, we have a guest in here patiently. I didn't even realize we were like running off at the mouth here. And we have Cheryl Lubin in on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
Exciting.
And thanks for sitting here patiently.
It's great. I've taken that exact drive. Uh-huh. And, you know, there's this new phenomenon called glamping. Fairly new, where
glamping.
El Capitan, which is uh-huh. right around Big Sur, and you go and like they check you in, and you go to a cabin. And I tried that 2 summers ago, uh-huh. and still too rustic for me.
Really?
I prefer the Mandalay Bay 5-star when I can afford it, that kind of thing. So I'm totally with you, Charlotte.
Yeah.
And I thank you for having me on the show. This is really the best Monday morning I could
really?
Imagine. Yes.
Wow. Well, we're flattered.
Yeah.
Yeah. For us, it's just another Monday.
For me, it's special. It really is to be here with you guys.
Thank you for coming.
Awesome. And yeah, I had a stressful weekend because we're trying to set up the new station, and I went and I was setting up things. So I plugged the lamp in the wall, and suddenly there was like a spark, and I even heard like noise, like machinery noise that I'd never heard before. And the wire just got really hot and stuff where I unplugged it right away and I felt shit. I could have been electrocuted.
Oh my god.
Because
okay.
Now all the sockets
wow.
don't work, so something happened there,
yeah.
a short or something.
Mm-hmm.
But so that stressed me out over the weekend, so I'm glad it's Monday.
Yes,
know?
Okay.
Let's start
new week.
Yeah,
yes,
let's start
new,
a
week.
New week. Yeah. So, Cheryl, you've been doing a show here on LA Talk Radio for a while. How long have you been doing it now?
I've been doing this show since last September, so 7 months. And it's called In Our Times. It's every Friday, Channel 2 at 3 o'clock.
Right.
And then we've been replaying it Saturday evenings at 8, and then Tuesdays at lunchtime, 1 o'clock.
Oh,
and
awesome.
Yeah.
So that's good. So people get to listen to you all over the place.
Exactly,
And of course, people listen to the archives if you can't catch your shows live.
Right.
And so tell us a little bit about In Our Times. What's the show about? What is it like?
Well, this show is really, I would have to say, the culmination of a dream for me. And LA Talk Radio is like the perfect home for this show because I can kind of be creative with it, as creative as I want. So I'm glad that I know you and that
creative
I'm here.
Creative freedom,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Everybody wants it. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, for me, In Our Times was, it's really the second version of a show that I began on Blog Talk Radio 3.5 years ago. And that was called Progressive's Corner. And it was sort of an intensely political, cultural show. And I interviewed professors, authors, politicians, playwrights, people who were writing plays and acting in plays and movies and doing things in show business and in education and politics that are affecting the world, that are about important things. We always had fun with it, but it was also, very serious as well.
Right.
And then I thought, well, I want to take a little break from it. And I went to China because I got a job last summer as a visiting professor of history.
Wow.
And so,
cool.
It was an amazing experience. And I'm writing a book about that. But
and you were there for what, a year?
No, I was just there for 8 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And I took my daughter with me, and she was only 13 at the time. I think you've met her. Her name is Miranda.
Have I met her?
I'm not sure, but one of these days.
Did you bring her here once?
Yeah, she's been here a couple times.
Oh, no, I never met her, but I'd like to.
Yeah. She's, in the Jewish tradition, she's kind of named after my grandfather, who is Morton, like the salt.
Uh-huh.
But Miranda. Anyway, so when we were there, I was teaching a class, and I was, they said, well, Cheryl, we really like your voice. Would you mind recording a couple of commercials? And so, and this was
very
at the
cool.
university. So I thought, well, absolutely, my pleasure. And then I thought, it's always been on my bucket list to just really take the show that I've been dreaming about, which is taking people's stories and broadcasting them and talking to people who have fascinating things to say, whether they're painful, enlightening things to say. And what I've discovered, and so I thought, well, I'm just going to do it. So when I came back from China, I found Sam and LA Talk Radio, and The rest is history in the making. History in the making. And I found that the stories that I've been telling, or I'm sort of the conduit for that, but the stories are powerful. I mean, I've spoken to a gentleman named Jose Torres Tama, who is really bringing to light the continued suffering of people in New Orleans, who in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, they still haven't rebuilt. And so he's going around the country and speaking about this and staging plays. And so, you know, he's been on the show. We're having Kevin Roos on the show next week because he is the author of Young Money. And he's going to be talking about why college graduates all are flocking to Wall Street and burning out in a year or two. And so these are issues of the times. And he also was most recently on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. So I'm like, if it's for Jon Stewart, it's good enough for me.
There you go.
So I feel honored to kind of be the one bearing witness to a lot of these stories.
And you learn a lot about people. You meet great people, you know, and that's a great thing about the radio, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've met so many people, and you know what's a funny thing is I go back like a couple weeks to write the show summaries, and I totally forget just by the name who it was. I have to like listen and remember to see who they were, because we meet so many people that you forget.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And then it must come back to you. Absolutely unforgettable.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, yeah.
And
yeah.
it sparks something in your brain that, or in your mind, wow, that was the person that did this, and that was the person that said this and made me think of this. And it just brings back different memories and makes you think and look at things in a different way.
It's like these emotional souvenirs, you know, that you kind of collect and treasure, and you learn something from everyone. And I can honestly say every single guest I've had has been an absolute delight. And, you know, I've interviewed a lot of actors around town, plays that they're staging about important topics, you know, The Normal Heart, which is a play about the early years of the AIDS epidemic. And so I had Bill Brocktrup in here to talk about that and a few other things. He was on NYPD Blue back in the 80s. Remember that?
Yeah.
So he was in the studio.
We had Dennis Franz on the show once.
My gosh. Yeah. I have heard. He is the nicest guy.
He is.
Yeah.
He's very nice.
Yeah.
Go on.
I mean, you know, when people put on a show, whether it's producing a film or a play that speaks to an issue in history that we either remember or heard about, and you have people talking about, you know, their experience of it, it's fascinating. So they were talking about what it was like to live through the early years of the AIDS epidemic and how the people who are still around, it's kind of honoring the many people whom we've lost,
right.
And also inspiring people and hopefully educating people that this is still a problem.
Right.
And so...
And it's, I mean, there was a time when AIDS was not a concern, you know. So, I mean, you were born into the generation of the AIDS scare and all that stuff, you know. But I remember a time when they used to call it VD, venereal disease, and it wasn't even STD yet.
Right,
you know?
Right. You just take a pill and, you know,
VD,
that kind of thing,
And that's it. And that's what you'd worry about, you know. But then came the killer, and people really started, you know, using protection and things like that.
Right.
You know? Before that, it was sort of carefree, you know. So, yeah.
Wow.
But anyway, to get back to you, so it focuses around the guests, your show.
Yes, yeah.
And is there like a theme to your show?
The theme is really political trends and the issue of the big issues that are affecting all of us today. But we're looking at the world through, admittedly, a politically liberal bent. But we are focusing really on things like income inequality, the importance of education. So any guests who are prominent in their fields, we're talking about that. So the theme is really kind of cultural and political figures, you know, important figures and what they have to say.
Right.
But really it is about how we can solve the problems of this country. And admittedly, and I'm always kind of very respectful of and welcoming to all points of view, but really what I think is the best outcomes are produced by kind of more progressive policies. That's my feeling about it.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, I'm kind of open to an embracing of that idea. Right.
So you have a lot to say about it. And
a lot.
Like
healthcare in England, where you're from, Charlotte, I mean, this is not even an issue, right? Healthcare. So we've talked a lot about healthcare.
Right.
It's different now living in America. And when I was at school, I was on a scholarship, so I had healthcare. Anything I needed, if I needed to see the doctor, I didn't have to think about it. I just went to the doctor. I was very lucky. Right. Whereas now, it's a struggle. It's a really big struggle. I didn't realize how the healthcare system worked in America. And to pay for it every month is hard.
Yeah, and pay good money too.
Yeah,
it's expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the fact that these are problems that we have to solve. So what are the big problems of the day? And this sounds kind of audacious and crazy, but what are the big problems of the day, and how can I, in my small way, sort of invite responses to them and invite points of view and possible solutions and, you know, and continue the discussion about them. So whether it's healthcare, education, economic inequality, which is a huge theme running through the show. Pretty much every show it comes up.
Really?
Every show. Each guest, in one way or another, has something to say about this has affected their lives, whether they've seen it or experienced it, whether they are from this country or not.
Yeah.
You know, what can we do to kind of make sure that we are okay and that our children are okay? Our future children, but although I'm done bearing children, but yeah.
You're done. How many do you have?
I just have the one.
Just the one.
Yeah,
awesome.
A young girl named Miranda. Yeah,
uh-huh. And how old is she now?
She's 14.
Oh wow!
Yeah, yeah, and well, you've raised children, right? And
I've raised children. I still am. But.
Yeah, teenagers are. They're it's like the best in it's Charles Dickens. It's the best and the worst, right, of times because they it's drama. Teenage girls. Uh-huh. Do you have a daughter?
I have a daughter. Yeah. She's 23. Still dramas and stuff. Yeah.
You started when you were like 13, right, Sam?
Yeah, just about. Yeah. Why? How old do you think I am? I could be grandfather. No, my daughter's 23. My son is 20.
Oh, very good. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the drama of raising a teenager is tough, but the rewards, I mean, when they are there for you and they show you how they are growing to become the adults that they are soon to be, it's beautiful.
Right,
you know?
Yeah. You just wait till you see what adults they become.
I kind of feel like I was telling a guest the other week about, you know, because he was on, I had Edwin Lingar, who's a Salon.com columnist, and that's the sort of liberal piece, you know, the online journal. And he was talking about how he and his father have had a big rift because his father is very conservative and he is not. And this has become a very personal division between father and son. They're trying to repair. We were talking about this, and he was also talking about how joyous and wonderful it is to be a father. He's a father of five. And I said, yeah. And I said, you know, and he's about my age. He's in his 40s. And I said, you know, I kind of feel like it's really ironic because you try every day to be the best parent you can be. And then I feel like by the time I totally get it right, in about 3 years, my daughter will be off to college.
Right.
So I'll be like, come home so I can really show you how great a mom I am, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
Like, please, I've got it right finally, you know?
Aww.
I know. But it's during the teenage years where they go through such a transition, you know, that for a moment there you might feel you're losing them, you know?
Right, right.
And but they get preoccupied in what they should be busy with, you know, I mean, and, you know, I keep reminding myself, what did I do at that age, you know? I mean, I didn't want to be with my parents. I wanted to be with my friends. I wanted to be with the girls, you know? So you can't blame them for doing the same thing, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's still difficult for a parent because, you know, your child always, like, worships you. It's like you're God to them, you know? Especially when they're, like, 3, 4, 5 years old.
Right.
You know, it's like they're really, like, they cling to you and everything, and it's a great feeling, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, even though I was divorced, I would see my kids every weekend and also during the week, and we also had a blast, you know?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the most wonderful kind of work that you will ever do in your right. life. Absolutely. So yeah. so that comes up. And what is society doing to support parents? I mean, my guest last week was, or 2 weeks ago, was a father who was divorced, and then now he's remarried. But he talked about how that being a single father opened up his kind of worldview about women, you know, and about how, you know, much of a struggle it is for single moms, because I had my daughter as a single mom, and the father and I are very, very dear friends, and, you know, we're very close. But, you know, that's a particular set of challenges. So we said being a divorced father and kind of trying to date and, you know, have some kind of, you know, intimate life, he said he understood the struggles that women faced. Right. So anytime a man says that, by the way, don't we love that? Yeah. When men say, you know, we get what struggles you women go through, I'm like, right. we love you. We love you,
Well, it's vice versa, too. You know, when women say, oh, we understand what you
absolutely,
mean.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, and sometimes I like when a woman writes an article that defends men or something, you
absolutely.
Know, because you go, here's
there
somebody.
There aren't many of them, but
I know, you know. But it's like, let's give men a break, you know, because the thing is, there's really high expectations of men, you know.
Sure.
And there always have been, you know, and I think men have been okay with it. But it's now like there's such a sort of a confusion because women are not looking to be taken care of anymore, you know.
They can exactly,
take
yeah.
care of themselves and stuff, you know.
Completely.
So it's like men have to reexamine their role now, and where do I fit in, you know?
Right, right.
It's like, you know, I think ever since Women's Lib, men maybe have felt that we're just like sperm donors or something.
Right.
We're not really necessary, you know. We're not needed for the process, you know.
It's more of the, I Instagrammed a photo the other week that said, spoil me with loyalty, I can finance myself.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that's what people are like these days. Women don't need, I mean, yeah, I like to be taken out to dinner, but I can do that myself if I really want to,
that's
you know?
Yeah,
like, I would rather the loyalty, the respect,
absolutely.
The love than everything else that I feel like men were. Because it was the women were the housewives, and that's what the men did. They brought home the bacon. But now, that's not the way.
Right.
Well, I should say, I started broadcasting 20 years ago when I was in college.
Oh, wow.
I went to Vassar, and I was at their radio station, and I did film reviews, and I did a lot of different things. But I've really been making my living as a teacher and now a professor, an adjunct professor, for, you know, quite a few years. And when I talk to my students, occasionally I'll kind of break the barrier and you know, kind of get real and talk about life issues outside of the subject matter if it seems appropriate. So what I always say to the young women is, when a guy shows or expresses a romantic interest in you, just pay no attention to what he says. Just pay attention only to what he does, right? Does he show you loyalty? Does he show you through his actions that he will be loving and caring and all of that? And so the guy said, well, what about us? What's your advice for us? And so I said, well, when it's time for you to get married and you feel like you want to get married, you marry a woman who is smart. Right. Marry a woman who is smart, who can help you in your life.
That's
right?
True.
I mean, physical attraction is great and important and critical, but you know the smarts have got to be there too.
Definitely,
right?
No, definitely. And you know, that's the thing. I was reading here, and I wanted to bring this up before, but this fits in right into it. Is they talk about you know, does flirting actually work? And they're saying that it, you know, the looks are not as important as showing your interest in the other person, you know, like with smiles or eye contact or something.
Definitely.
But, you know, at the same time, though, that makes you pretty vulnerable to show someone that you're interested. And so, you know, when they reject you, I think it's a lot more painful.
Yeah.
So that's why for me, it's always been hard to do that, like to be in a club or a bar or something.
Oh, yeah.
And show my interest to a woman or something, you know, because then if she's not interested, it's like, oh, man, I made a fool out of myself, you know.
And really, she's obviously, it's a very superficial situation, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, inevitably, like at a bar or whatever. And so, right. So I guess you know, I don't know, glass of Chardonnay or glass of like a little bit Jack Daniels or whatever. I mean, just a little bit of, you know,
loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, we can become like heightened versions of ourselves, and that affects the flirting or helps the flirting along. But then at a certain point, you know, it becomes more real, or we hope it does.
Yeah. I think actions definitely speak louder than words.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah.
You can tell. I mean, anyone can say they love you, but it's until someone really shows you and proves to you that they do. I mean, it's just all words.
Right.
Exactly. Absolutely.
It's about action, you
know?
Yeah. Yeah. So were you born here in L.A.?
Yes, I'm from L.A. I'm a beach girl. I don't like camping, but I'm totally a beach girl. And I don't look it, but I surfed and swam on the beach and grew up in Malibu. I kind of grew up going to school with the Brat Packers, Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez.
Really?
Malibu Park Junior High, which no longer exists. It's sort of merged and become Malibu High School. But that was sort of my time and place.
Uh-huh.
And I had totally crazy upbringing with parents who are like hippies, crazy, loving but crazy, and I got the heck out of there as soon as I could. We have a good connection now, but I went to New York when I was 17. I went to college and graduated, and then just I wanted to do something meaningful, and I went to law school, and I, you know, graduated from law school. I was a lawyer for a short time, and I was then recruited in New York to be a professor of courtroom drama. So that's really one of the other big themes of the show is celebrity trials and courtroom drama. So I taught that in New York for, about 7 years.
Wow.
And so I did that for a long time. And then I missed California.
Yeah.
This is where I was from. I had a grandmother whom I completely adored. She passed away a couple of years ago, but I really missed her. And I wanted to come back and be near her. So I moved back here like 17 years ago.
Wow.
I thought, this is my home. You know,
yeah,
it's my home. And I came back and I got a job teaching public school. And, you know, you do what you have to do to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
But I continued to write and make some, you know, radio show appearances when I could. But you never let go of that dream of wanting to write stories and tell stories and all of those things.
Right.
So you actually
grew up in Malibu?
I did, yeah. I lived there from, the age of about 10 to 18, 17, 18.
So your parents were well-to-do. I mean, they must have had a lot of money, right?
Well, my father, my mother, not so much. I lived with my father and my stepmother for those particular years.
So you were where the money was.
I could kind of see it from a distance, right? I could see it over the hill, right? I mean, we lived right near, actually, this is great. This is probably why I'm in my comfort zone when I'm like talking about celebrities or talking to celebrities, because I mean, we lived right on the same beach as Ryan O'Neal and the years when he was hot and heavy with Farrah Fawcett, right before they had their son together. And we used to walk around and see them all the time jogging on the beach. The most gorgeous woman. And what people don't realize about Farrah Fawcett, who sadly did pass away a couple of years ago, but what people don't realize is such a beautiful woman, but truly beautiful on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really a very caring and sweet
lady. That's what
they
say,
Yeah.
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I feel like
I'm jumping around all over the place, but you guys are so much fun to talk to.
It'll come back to you.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Just I had to find out about the money, you know.
So it's like the money is this great gleaming pile of cash right there, but I never quite got to it, you know. But that's the way
life is.
It's
funny that you had hippie parents, you know.
I think that on the one hand, and this is a theme as well in the show, that, you know, my father really kind of benefited from the economic boom and the economic wave that positively kind of carried people along, people who came of age in the 60s, as he did, people who were like getting married and having kids in the 60s. I think those Americans caught the best financial wave, right? That generation.
That's true.
And we talk about that a lot. And then their kids, and so I would be like the oldest of the Generation X, I'm in my late 40s. and we were kind of royally screwed. And so it, and you just, you do your best to kind of follow your dreams and make it. And but this issue of what each generation faces in terms of financial challenge and how we meet that challenge and how we try to solve the problems together is a huge issue.
Yeah. Right.
So that's big. Yeah, but as far as hippie parents, I mean, yeah, I mean, my mother, she left and went off to live in a commune, and
really?
I've had very little to do with her.
Wow.
And I'm actually, this is, my friends have said to me, Cheryl, you've got to, when are you going to write your book? When is your book about this coming out?
Right.
And to be totally honest, I think that's going to take some time.
Yes,
but yeah, I mean, it's really, California, by the way, it's just, I know, we are the land of so much that is amazing, right?
I
mean,
yeah.
Show business, Hollywood, culture, natural beauty, earthquakes, and cults.
Weather.
Yeah, weather, but cults, right?
So, yeah.
You know, the cults of the 60s and
That's
70s,
true.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I was sort of a part of that for a while.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I remember what I was going to ask. It was about your book and writing. You've had a passion for writing?
Yes, I do. My book, actually, you can get it at barnesandnoble.com, and I'll you know, publicize that in our times as well. But it's called Courting the Stage, and it's about famous trials throughout history.
Ooh.
So when famous, cool. like Inherit the Wind, the Scopes Monkey Trial, they put the teacher on trial for teaching about evolution, right?
Oh,
the
wow.
most famous American case of the 1920s. And this teacher, John Scopes, was just teaching his kids biology, you know, his students. This is, you know, a theory, valid, really, about how life begins and how life evolved. And he was, you know, there was a different layer to the story, but he was arrested, and the state of Tennessee said it is against the law to do this. So America has a very puritanical kind of history
right,
to it, right?
Right. And
yeah.
I think we're still very religious, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very religious country, you know. Some people
it definitely
don't admit
is.
It.
I agree.
And
yeah.
it's where religion and it's when people practice their religion. It's funny, Passover, it seems like a perfect time to talk about this, and Easter, because when people are practicing their religion, it's sort of like, let's celebrate those differences and let's celebrate how people feel and welcoming you, you know, for a Seder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. But on the other hand, this is a country where our religion has crept into our political life
right.
in a way that you don't see in England,
yeah.
right? And you don't see in other democracies.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I got a shock when I first came here and
yes,
realized,
yeah.
I mean, just the elections and everything, it's just a lot different to England,
right.
a lot.
Yeah,
definitely. And it's hard to believe because it all started in England, you know?
And that's the crazy thing. And even when things are based, like Obamacare is based supposedly off the healthcare system in England, America has their own twist on it. And it's, I don't think it's much alike the healthcare system. To
right.
some extent it is, but...
Right, yeah. right.
America's always... It's just a lot of different... America twists things and just makes it their own kind of unique, right?
Or as one of my
Maybe,
guests...
Not in always a bad way, but yeah. I love America. That's
no,
why I'm
it's
here,
true,
but
though. But, I mean, we're different in many ways. You know, we have, like, the rest of the world uses the Matrix system, and we still use, you know, the old Roman system.
We're clinging to that. We're going to be unique. And, you know, what my guest, Edwin Lingar, said 2 weeks ago about, you know, I lost my father to Fox News was the name of his piece. And that was just kind of like a sexy title for the piece.
Uh-huh.
His father is alive and well, fortunately. But, you know, he said, I said, you know, why is it that we have this sort of puritanical streak in our politics? I mean, why do we kind of ratchet up the rhetoric and why do we get that extreme? I was just asking him that. And he said, you know, we have this idea in America that we are going to do it better than anyone else, whether it's, you know, pundits on television, whether it's, you know, the drama of the election season. This is America, damn it. And we're just going to be the best in the world, whether it's good or bad, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, we're going to outdo England. But we, you know, but England is a beautiful place.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think we have a very good healthcare system.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what my British friends have said to me.
Yeah, in Europe, they take care of the people's health. I don't know what it is. But I think it's just because America is a very individualistic society, you know. And that's what we cherish is our freedom, our individuality and stuff. So we have to also understand that we have to be responsible for our own care and stuff.
And
as
it's
well,
also a very big country. I mean, England's this, right. around the size of Florida, right. and we have one person right. taking care and seeing over everything. America is humongous. Right. There's right. no way that one person can try and please so many people and think that that's the best. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Actually, that really puts it into perspective, right? Yeah. Talking about, you know, Florida and, mm-hmm. yeah, that it's, it, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're very fascinating. I mean, there's yeah, so much. That's... We'll have to invite you back for some more.
Oh, anytime.
You know?
My pleasure.
Now, I wanted to ask you, so you went to law school, actually, too,
right? I did.
Right?
I did. I was really young. I mean, I was only 23 when I passed the bar. And wow. I, yeah, and this is another kind of story.
Did you go here or New York?
I went to Tulane Law School in New Orleans,
oh, New
which
Orleans.
Is another wow. kind of surreal experience living yeah. in the Deep South, but the people are lovely. And I moved right back to New York, and I passed the bar. I started working for a law firm, and the type of work I was doing, and I was really just one of a huge fleet of lawyers working at a huge firm, but we were defending Dow Corning against women. They had been accused of harming women who had breast implants, and now they were really harmed by that. Right.
Right? And I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt very... secretly very uncomfortable with the nature of the work, that if you're doing that kind of work, you're going to make a solid living as a lawyer, or more likely back then, but morally, it didn't feel good to be defending
the bad guys.
Yeah, it just yeah. didn't. And it doesn't mean I'm a saint, but I couldn't do it. And so just at that moment when I kind of felt like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this, and I'm only 23. That was, you know, many years ago. So I didn't even know what I wanted to do with my life. I was told, you're going to be doing this forever. I just was told, well, why don't you teach courtroom drama? You have a nice, you know, an okay voice. Mm-hmm. Why don't you teach courtroom drama at this college?
Right.
And that was a dream job. And so I just kind of, you know, graciously said goodbye to the law firm and went over there, and I've been teaching ever since.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of, so I sort of opted for a more financially modest life, but one of greater joy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't realize they teach courtroom drama. I mean, what's sure. that about?
It can take different forms, but it can be anything from, well, in China, when I was there last summer, I taught the history of American courtroom drama, like the Scopes Monkey Trial and the O.J. Simpson trial. They were right. totally fascinated by
yeah,
you know,
who was
the
it?
Racial divide. Yeah. 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 And I said, you know, I was right in my neighborhood. And so, you know, there's the history of that. But there's also my students at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York were studying to become either police officers or lawyers or something related to law enforcement or legal practice. And so we would actually stage mock trials. So, you know, you would be, you know, the defense attorney. You would be the prosecuting attorney. You would recruit your own witnesses. We would have a completely made-up situation.
That's
so
fun.
So it's like staging a play. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And even students who thought they were going to do something completely different, a career in, you know, medicine or whatever, they enjoy this class because the better and more comfortable you are, as you guys know, speaking, right, then it eases your path through life, right?
Right?
It really does. And
yeah.
so, you know, men and women who are training to be police officers found themselves, you know, trying to get through college and trying to get their bachelor's degree. But with the courtroom drama class, they knew, they understood that they were going to have to sit on the witness stand as a witness in real life. And, you know, to the extent that I could make them feel comfortable with that prospect wow. and rehearse that, you know, that with them,
yeah.
it was really helpful, I think, to them because they did the work. You know,
right.
I was just sort of helpful to them, mm-hmm. I think, but they did the work.
Right.
Wow.
So,
that's an interesting class. Yeah. I remember taking business law and I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the law is at its worst very dull and very destructive, but at its best, it's juicy and dramatic,
right.
and just, it tells us about ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. And so what I'm hoping to do one day is develop either a second show or something where that focuses just on celebrity trials.
Right.
You know, that would be great.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
So what are you doing now, Cher? What do you do with your life now?
Well, I mean, I do the show, of course, but right. I also, you know, I was a visiting professor at the University of International Relations in China, but I've been teaching at a private high school in the Valley for the last 3 years.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, so we teach high school, and I'm the chair of the humanities department and, you know, just teaching literature and history to mostly juniors and seniors in high school. So,
don't teach law anymore?
No, I don't teach it. I do, I mean, occasionally I'll be called into UCLA, which is where I got my doctorate in theater. So they'll call me in to speak publicly about the law, but, and that's maybe once every 3-4 months. But how I kind of, you know, earn the paycheck and pay the rent is through teaching high school.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Cher Lubin, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. It's been great.
What do you want to promote your show again? Tell us
Absolutely.
When the show is on.
Thank you. In Our Times, Fridays at 3, Channel 2, LA Talk Radio. And we replay several times throughout the week, but you can also go to the archives. And this Friday, we are having Kevin Roos, who was a Wall Street Journal columnist, and he'll be talking about Young Money, and he was on the Rachel Maddow show and the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and it's going to be great. He's funny and smart, and it's going to be a lot
exciting.
Of fun.
Very
yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
And your book, where can people find the book? What's the title of it?
Courting the Stage.
Okay.
By Cheryl Lubin and BarnesandNoble.com.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining us, Charlotte.
See you
Get
tomorrow.
Some rest from your trip.
I will.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.